hello from Eugene. This is Catherine, and we just listened to Marcus Fisher. He has a look up MapMap or the blog dustbreeding.com. Those were sounds that were based on field recordings using contact mics and other methods to create some of the most unique sounds that allow us to explore more closely the music in nature. These are notes from the release company on the album Arctic Antarctic. It's an amazing exposition of organic analyzing, synthesizing, and abstraction generation. Anyway, beautiful music, and I'd encourage you to look it up online.
Thanks, Catherine. Thanks for bringing that, and thanks for bringing yourself down here. We're here. Carl's on top of it, as always, patching everything together. And but the phone, week four with no phone, beginning of week nine with the 25,000 barrels of oil gushing out in the Gulf of Mexico every day, twice as much as they said it was. You know, the background is kind of interesting. The sort of, oh, what would you call it? What happens on a pretty much daily basis? For example, the oil spill in Utah, 21,000 gallon oil leak, heading for the Great Salt Lake itself. Apparently, that may not get there, but pretty sad for migratory birds, fish, etc. And the 8 tons of furnace oil that were befouled beaches in Orissa state of India recently. Just things like that. No one knows for sure, but there are scores of millions of gallons of oil as part of the, quote, normal cost of operating. The spills from rigs and tanker ships and just all the different ways. Yeah, that's just the old normalcy of it, the normalcy of industrial life, just as one could think of a million things here, but I was just looking at, you keep hearing about multi-state E. coli outbreaks, ground beef, romaine lettuce, potato salad, and now milk. That's a staple. That's a constant. And just to throw in one news thing, this just in from study author Manuel Vargas Yanez of the Spanish Institute of Oceanography. The long and the short of it is the Mediterranean Sea is heating up and getting saltier at a much faster pace since the 1990s. Well, just a reminder, one other little housekeeping thing. The Ireland trip, I'm embarking on that a week from tomorrow morning, and some of you might have heard about the fracas with Andrew Flood there, a well-known syndicalist in Dublin, who's been given to attacking primitivism and me in particular at times. So I challenged him to some kind of public discussion or debate, and his first response was no. And he's kind of come around, I feel like, reluctantly felt like, well, it's not going to sell too well to just say no, having engaged on the topic already. So, but it was too late finally when he stopped kind of dodging around. Then he tried to make it sound as if he wanted it all along, which is false, as a matter of fact. But a long little drama in itself, perhaps. But the four gigs that I'm doing there have been set, and one of them will be in Dublin, and Mr. Andrew Flood and his friends are completely welcome to be a part of it. As I emailed him today, I'm not a real long-winded speaker, and I'm hoping we can still have some dialogue, some open discussion so that people can be filled in. We seem to be kind of on diametric opposite sides. During the course of this little discussion, said that he considers anarcho-primitivism to be dangerous, reactionary, and potentially genocidal. So, and I contended that, no, it's just the opposite, Andrew. It's your point of view that wants to continue on with this suicidal thing. That is clearly those things, perhaps. Well, we're going to be talking about quite a few interesting topics, sadly without your phone calls. But just to get warmed up, let me rip through a sampling of Action News here. This happened last month, but only, and some of these things are just very recently reported in the past few days. There were postcards. Postcards in North Carolina. Postcards mailed from Asheville, threatening timber companies, specifically the idea of logging in national forest areas near Blowing Rock. This has caused a bit of a stir, and we will see what's going on. This has been called eco-terrorism, and I don't know what's next, the next shoe to drop on that. Here's one from early, just the beginning of this month. A Tandy Leather Factory store in Salt Lake City was torched. Yes, it was. Someone or someones broke into the store, spread and, quote, accelerant up and down the aisles and over the leather in storage. Last Monday night in Montreal, some anarchists smashed all the windows of a Sodexo office. They are the parent company that makes food for Canadian prisons. In Stockholm last week, immigrant youths rioted and burned down a school building and attacked a police station, set cars on fire. This was Monday night and Tuesday night after being refused entry to a school dance. Immigrants largely from Somalia. That district of Stockholm is referred to as Little Mogadishu by some. And also last week, two vehicles belonging to the religious order that runs at least five prisons for immigrants in Italy, the Misericordia Catholic Order, went up in flames. Two vehicles, everybody, more or less everybody agrees that the fires were deliberate because there was a slogan on a nearby wall against the detention centers. Last Thursday in Santiago, a bomb partially destroyed the Banco Estado in eastern part of Santiago. Nobody has claimed this attack as of a couple of days ago anyway. A few hundred meters from the presidential residence, as a matter of fact. Last Friday night, and what I like about some of these is not only the actions per se, but some of these statements. For example, there was a incendiary attack against two tanks and a trailer used for development for destruction of the earth, as they put it. Our action was clear and concise. We will not allow that they yield profit on wild nature and ecosystems to expand civilization. Berlin on Saturday, there was an anti-government cutback demo. Demonstrators numbered between 20,000 people, pelting cops with stones, bottles, and then an explosive, injuring two officers. There was some kind of a shrapnel bomb at this demo last Saturday. On Sunday, at the border between El Paso and Juarez, the Monday before, a 15-year-old boy was shot to death by a U.S. Border Patrol agent, and this set off on Sunday a confrontation. People attacked the fence, cut holes in the fence. There are actually pictures of masked up people going on the offensive there. There was an attack in Madrid on a Benetton store, the very fashionable Benetton, in solidarity with the Mapuche. This world where the everyday actions of our lives have become disgustingly artificial, where the new gods to be worshipped are science, technology, and money, in which social control is absolute, where minds, bodies, the land, and the sea are destroyed, where there is no place for naturalness, tranquility, clean air, cheerfulness, modesty, living with nothing, this world deserves to be destroyed. And this happened on the attack, breaking the windows out, Sunday night the 13th. Rebels against this barbarism called civilization. And in Buenos Aires, also on the weekend, two vans were set on fire. The anarchists claim this in a part of Buenos Aires. Despite all the threats by the police and the CIA, we'll never cut off our roots that lie in the strength of the ideas of freedom. Their dirty way of life is defended by the servants of the system, middle-class workers, including journalists, supporting the prison-like position of civilization, destroyer of the earth, again in solidarity with the Mapuche. And this is just yesterday, beginning yesterday. Thousands have undertaken a blockade at this is near Peru, a smelter. Thousands of Peruvian workers blocking a key highway. And we'll see. This is just getting going, and they called in 2,000 cops. And yesterday, police arrested dozens of Greenpeace activists near Stockholm. They broke into the Forsmark nuclear power plant to protest the rearming, if you will, of this plant. They want to recharge it, revitalize it, keep it going. And speaking of statements that accompany these things, or that more or less do, there was a statement by Amy Larkin last Saturday. She's the director of Greenpeace. And the bottom line, this has largely to do, the background of it is the Gulf disaster. It's kind of a long letter, but it ends up, we must act with urgency to create a renewable energy infrastructure and economy for the 21st century. You know, any oil company could say that. I mean, what kind of vision or horizon is that? That doesn't sound very radical. Their actions are militant, but they have no analysis to speak of, I would say. Here's one little Nature Strikes Back. Did you read about this one, Carl? Islamadora, Florida. A man was dozing on his recliner. His, what do they call those things? There's a word for those.
Like a porch swing?
No, a...
lawn chair?
No, inside you.
Hammock.
Never mind. His recliner. Oh, there's a word I don't... Anyway.
Lazy boy.
Oh. He was on his lazy boy. He fell asleep. There was a giant stuffed water buffalo head mounted on the wall. It fell on him, and he was trapped. He needed an ambulance. He cried out that he was crushed.
It gored him?
He wasn't really crushed, but it just fell on him. It was big. And anyway, Stephen, who sent me this piece, says named it, "One Buffalo Returns Favor for Near Extinction." Cool. And two announcements here. There is a NEST benefit, the Cascadia Forest Defender folks here in Eugene, on Friday, this Friday the 18th at 7:30 at the warehouse at 2nd and Garfield, the Eugene Free School warehouse, food, bands, etc., to back up the summer forest defense folks. And I'm sure I'll refer to this again, but from July 9th to July 17th in Tacoma, 9 days of events and actions up there in Tacoma against patriarchy, beyond feminism. Quite a whole list of things, workshops, films, all sorts of things. That's next month, the 9th to the 17th. And of course, in about 10 days, G20 in Toronto, and that could just get exciting. Could be. Well, okay. Lots of other stuff, but it's a sampling of resistance around the world. Of course, there are all kinds of riots and strikes in China. More of that, and that is a real constant. So
a little pause here.
A little pregnant pause.
Yeah, a little pregnant pause. China. Well, off the cuff on China, my daughter told me China's raising the minimum wage, and the impact on world economies apparently is going to be disastrous. It's going to cause inflation everywhere. So a little minimum wage there upsets the precarious non-balance that isn't there anyway. China, maybe we can work together here and get into the whole idea of ecology without nature and take off on that from China.
Whoa. Well, this is, I think Cliff mentioned that our good friend Slavoj Žižek took this idea from an American, Morton is his name. He wrote a book with that name, right?
Right. Harvard professor, I think. And I think it was pretty recent. And I didn't see when I looked at what Cliff was talking about, the film, I believe, videos or something, and then got led into this blog site by Martin that is based on his book, Ecology Without Nature. And one of the two of them asserts that kind of the left has embraced that there's this idea of ecology without nature. So I thought it'd be good to just kind of kick that around. I mean, I think that's just an incredibly pregnant concept, ecology without nature. Because I do think what we're seeing everywhere, and there's been this huge, gradually over time, just more and more embracing of this idea of green, live green, sustain. It's that whole kind of technological fix to the belief in technological fixes to continued development, a continued kind of roboticized world. And so that, but inherent in the whole idea of ecology is nature, right? It's a science of nature. So in some ways, I think I kind of really like the title of that book, Ecology Without Nature and the Association with the Left, because it's insane. It's just preposterous. It's, and it exactly pinpoints to me the nightmare future that we're headed towards, and that is this like end of nature, this concept that technology wins, science wins, everything's controlled, you know, mm-hmm, everything mm-hmm. controlled. So I'll turn it over to you with that.
Well, that point, one of the points you made there about ecology, living systems and their balance and their interdependence, you know, the general notion of ecology, yeah, what they're doing, as I understand it, is, well, why not bring in, you know, culture, technology, everything? It's all ecology. It's all, you know, and meanwhile, of course, nature does get sort of evacuated. And I think so much of just the general cultural meaning, I would say, and that is, and it's been expressed in different ways, not formulated as a kind of an approach or a theory, but the more general idea that the unbuilt world, the quote natural world, is just gone. Forget about it. There's no, that struggle is over. And they weren't interested in that struggle, of course, ever in the beginning. But that's, you can do that when you feel that there is no point in talking about nature. That's just been swamped. It's just dead. So then you just move on. Well, a lot of people don't want to move on, including indigenous people, obviously, and then a lot of other people as well. I mean,
residents of the Louisiana coast, for example.
Sure.
I mean, right, even starting from that point to say nature is gone is obviously nature is not gone, but it is going, mm-hmm, is, you know, mm-hmm. rapidly.
Well, I can't get away from this quote. I used to use it all the time in talks, not in recent years much, but Frederick Jameson, and Cliff and I was talking about Frederick Jameson when he was here. Postmodernism is what you get when the modernization process is complete and nature is gone for good. That says everything. And then So it's no surprise that, you know, you have this ecology without nature concept after that. Well, they've gotten rid of it, but they haven't. I mean, they'd like to turn their backs on it because they worship technology, basically. I can't really find one, no matter how severe things get, that, you know, that one of them will stray from that, you know. And, you know, if I could just throw in one thing here, that it's maybe a little off the topic, but, you know, there really is, I think, an encouraging number of articles just in the past week or two, really a deluge in New York Times, for example, about all the nasty effects of the technologized world on everything, on the way people think or don't think, interact or don't interact. There's this whole, I mentioned one about this Campbell family, big long piece last week. Well, here's another one called Are You Here, Mom? And of course, Are You is the Twitter Are You letters, you know. And it's this sad thing about how, and it starts out with this little 2-year-old boy that this writer, Julie Shelpo, witnesses his kid trying to get his mother's attention, pulling on her pant leg, you know, calling out to her, Mama, Mama, and just going, wait, just a second, just a second. She's completely wired. The kid could be on fire, you know. Just, and she goes, and this article is really quite good, and it brings up Sherry Turkle, who is probably the biggest expert on the really woeful impact on, especially on young people, kids and adolescents and so forth, starting with her own daughter. I was here for her talk a couple of years ago, and it was amazing. And then at the end, she says, oh, well, that's the way it is. That's progress. That's technology. And just sat down, and I was just floored by that. Well, they cite her right away here, too. She's coming out with a new book, early next year, called Alone Together, and you can tell right away by the title. And the book apparently talks about, Dr. Turkle talks about how being so engrossed with all this stuff, you're just walling out the world. You're walling out your kids. You're walling out everything. There's nothing left. I mean, but then she is the one with the punchline, well, that's, oh, well. You know, that is so threadbare. That's so appalling. You know, you can't give us this whole story, this tragedy, and then just say, oh, well.
Well, it's kind of like the thing, ecology without nature. If there's no nature, then there's nothing to defend. The fight's over. We all go, you know, it's all over. We all may as well embrace all the everything about technology. And so, you know, I mean, you can't leave the BP disaster. Okay, so you take right now as the oil continues to gush into the Gulf. The common viewpoint is put out there like, oh, this is a disaster, you know, oh, it's so bad. The pictures, the media embracing the oil-soaked birds as, you know, oh, we're all so upset by this. At the same time, there's this undertone of interviewing all the oil execs from all the different companies who are all together in the office with BP, and we're all working together on this terrible disaster. Now, I'm sorry to say, but I get a little concerned that when they blew that hole, at whatever level they blew it, they came upon the biggest damn oil field that they've seen forever, you know, for ages. And they popped it. It's gushing. It is a disaster. And the people who live there, the common people, you and me, we all are sick about it. But in fact, there are people who can see opportunity where capping now. Okay, what are they capping now? What are they taking out now? They say, oh, we're sorry, it's only half. But you've got, honestly, you've got all of these oil companies, you've got this big field. They've been looking forever. World War I and the Middle East fields were the big access to big big kind of thing. It's like, you know, hey, for some people, for these ones, ecology without nature, do we really need the Gulf of Mexico or the Atlantic seaboard? You know, I mean, really, if you look at the whole planet, access to this kind of oil for select whoever gets to be participants in the so-called new singularity, maybe this isn't such a big disaster to them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the complete silence, really, from the left. You know, we could think of 100 people who have never even mentioned this topic, much less the meaning of this disaster, or the meaning of technology, or the meaning of a lot of things. But yeah, we're only seeing part of this at this point.
We're only seeing part. You don't see any of that. I have friends who will go, you look on the internet and stuff, and you can see, you know, something like this happens. Some people are mad. And so there's stuff like there's BP stations that I didn't bring my action news, okay? But I'm sure some of the listeners can go online, start looking at what is happening to some local BP stations. I know there's been stuff tossed on signs. There's been all different levels of stuff that none of it is covered. Mm-hmm. I was telling you earlier about a little thing, Just Seeds Organization and Art Collective, where they went to a museum in Texas that was funded by BP, and they made paper mache oil-soaked birds and released them on helium balloons and ruined the day for many people in the art museum who didn't want to see the oil-soaked birds overhead. But you know, there are people who don't say it's the end of nature. You know, people who are pissed off about this. But none of this is really broadcast or talked about. And to me, that kind of goes back to opposition, the left, the whole outrageous mm-hmm. concept. Ecology without nature is just, if you're Zizek, Jameson, Martin, whoever you are, it's just a hands-off, wash your hands, sit back and watch the dominoes fall where they fall.
And in some cases, come up with even weaker approaches than you had before. I mean, the Bill McKibben, for example, well-known, he wrote that book called The End of Nature 10 years ago or something. He has a column just a few days ago begging Obama to be the savior of the environmental crisis. That is unbelievable. That's even more stupid than the usual weak drivel he puts out. That's just so uncanny. I mean, it's unbelievable. But so, yeah, we're not going to get any help from those people. And, you know, I just to close up before the break, we need to take a music break. You know, I was mentioning Frederick Jameson, and maybe in a certain sense when we kind of started some of this with Zizek, and then it led to Martin and so forth. And I was mentioning his new book, Valences of the Dialectic, which is a very straight-ahead, tepid leftist book. I mean, there's no... All of those books that he wrote that are very fancy and postmodern, and you can't have a hard time making out just what he's trying to say. This one is very simple, and it's very sad that he's, at 76, perhaps kind of winding things up a bit with something so transparently bad. You know, that's the limit. Especially when you talk about concepts like ecology without nature or any other thing that one might hope could be useful, could be helpful in opposing all this and coming up with something better. One thing Jameson has written about and has come back to many, many times in his career is utopia. The utopian, whatever happened to the utopian element, the utopian imagination, we have to find a way to that which isn't so familiar. We got to break out to the utopia. And then he writes this complete sludge, this really boring, we have to support the liberals. I mean, what happened to what he's been saying for decades on and off about the utopian as something that's kind of been lost, and we've got to connect with it. And then, you know, it's really, we can't have any illusions about waiting for something from people like Zizek or Jameson or any of these theorists. It's just too appalling. I'm going to take a little music break. Expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Have a few writings to refer to. Maybe this will kind of help us along on the topic we've been pursuing here in a way. An article in the brand new New Yorker magazine, kind of interesting, about the boom in dystopian fiction for young readers, young adult readers, that sort of thing. And the main point here, Laura Miller is the critic who's writing this piece, kind of surprised at how much of this there is. It's nothing new, but how much of it there is at this time is new and interesting to her. And I think the punchline here is where she writes, The adult dystopia extrapolates from aspects of the present to show readers how terrible things will become if our deplorable behavior continues unchecked. So this is kind of the background of that, and that's the upside, of course, of dystopia for readers of any age, you know, when you 1984 or Brave New World or all that kind of thing. It's a picture of where things are going. I mean, they're not necessarily completely accurate, but they give you some sense of it, some information. Well, this is something that, thanks to Kevin, I heard about. We want to have something a little edifying here, a little bit of an upper. On The Daily Show, one day last week, evidently, a fellow named Spencer Wells was on the show talking about his new book, which is quite popular. I don't know exactly if he's on the bestseller list, but he's got a pretty hot book called Pandora's Seed, The Unforeseen Cost of Civilization. From obesity to chronic fatigue syndrome, jihadism, urban ennui, etc., 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 the costs of civilization are becoming ever more apparent. And one of the things, I don't want to go way off into this, I've got some reviews here, but I'm going to really check this out in depth. One of the things that he zeroes in on is the turning point, which is domestication. So he's talking about civilization in a pretty exacting sense, and not some vague sense, but what is it, where does it come from? And of course, he can see it's the shift to domesticated life about 10,000 years ago, and this is quite a completely helpful book at this time to understand what's going on. The tremendous and accelerating changes that are going on right now, they go back to this. And all of these things he somehow pulls together in terms of the whole, that this ensemble of things has a coherence and roots, and he goes into all kinds of things to the high tech, the genetic engineering, and everything else of that today.
Well, that kind of brings up a movie I went to see last night in Portland called Lords of Nature, and that was shown at the Hollywood Theater, and makes a case that of the need for the top predators that civilization has gotten rid of in the last really less than 50 years. Boy, I'm having my trouble tonight talking. Really? these are yeah, sensitive great. Issues here, kind of thing. The whole health of ecosystems, looking at Yellowstone, needing their top predator, the wolves. Once you got rid of the wolves, the OSU scientists actually saw a correlation that the forest started, the demise of the forests once the coincided completely with the end of wolves in Yellowstone. And they found basically that the deer's overgrowth of them destroyed the tree line, so then there's no forest, so then the streams erode, so then there are no beavers, so then there's no lizards, there's no frogs, you know, and this whole kind of thing of you need the top predator. Man, you know, has assume the role in our forests here and all of being the top predator and shot and gotten rid of and made great glory in the early part of the century of getting rid of the cougars, the jaguars, the lynxes, all the predators. A real good case that, hey, it doesn't work. It destroys the planet. That same, it goes, you know, I'd say we've come full circle here, domestication of nature. You don't allow that, you know, we assume the high role, we're going to take over everything, control everything, and we took out them, and consequently, Yellowstone, Grand Teton, you know, all these places they showed Zion suffered.
Well, maybe that's the real meaning of ecology without nature, right? Domestication is moves away from the natural in a fundamental way, and I don't know. It seems to me kind of connects the dots there.
I mean, I think it's so, you know, I just think it's so true. It's like that inherent, a concept, ecology without nature, we were saying during the break. It's like the epitome of postmodern caught it. But it's just like completely contradictory. Without nature in all its randomness, unpredictability, uncontrol, non-standardization, diversity, is in complete opposition to the technological science, okay, ecology is the science of nature. The science of nature, well, nature isn't really a science, maybe. But, I mean, the standardization, homogenization, predictability, control, domination, that's all. That's the one way. And the other way that they're saying, are you there, Mom? Or, you know, dystopia, utopia. You can connect the dots, you know.
Oh, yeah. And if once, I guess if the postmodern culture is around enough and immersive and pervasive enough, then, you know, the effects are cumulative. You can get to even worse formulations, or, you know, and here, this is not written in a postmodern vein at all. This is a fairly new book called Learning Native Wisdom. And I thought, well, this sounds promising. Learning Native Wisdom. What Traditional Cultures Teach Us About Subsistence, Sustainability, and Spirituality by Gary Holthaus. A most incredible book, and I don't want to, we don't have a whole lot of time, but I just want to, this book, there is nothing in this book about native wisdom. It's unbelievable. You can call a book like that, but you can title a book, and it's just amazing. Once again, it's the old standby, using sustainability in almost every paragraph and never even getting back to what could that mean and why did I say something about traditional cultures or native ways or something, because there's nothing like that in it. It's just remarkable. I felt like sending him a very nasty email, and then I thought of the surrealist poster showing some fascist or another, and the caption was, "How do you slap a dead man?" I've always loved that. It's beyond hope, you know. There's no point. Yeah, and I thought one little thing out of a million things I could mention here. He's talking about, in passing, he was in Nicaragua in the 80s, and he complains very bitterly, this author, about how the government was all down in the Sandinistas, and they called them commies, and he said, well, that just shows that the media is lying, and the government is lying, and I'm so shocked they're lying. And you know what he fails to mention, speaking of learning native wisdom, is what happened to the Miskito Indians on the Atlantic coast of Nicaragua. They were headed for extermination on the part of the Sandinistas. I mean, they wanted them into the factories. They wanted the end of that indigenous waste of time where they're not workers and producers and consumers. It's an amazing story. So for this guy to talk about natives and then implicitly say they were great, those Sandinistas, and it was just the lousy lies that are told. Oh, sure, there were lousy lies. I'm not saying that. But, you know, the forced labor and the extinction of their culture, that's what they were heading for when the Sandinistas, after they took power. And the Miskito tribes along the Atlantic were rather shocked. Not to go on and on forever, but one of the big the Sandinista government messages for that part of Nicaragua that they wanted to industrialize was a giant awakens. In other words, you know, it's time to mine the hell out of it and put in dams and get rid of this waste of time, indigenous culture. And it says, and I read this one part where the Miskitos took one look at this and must have said among themselves, I didn't realize we were asleep, did you? So they came to civilize the savages, the same civilizing, domesticating horror show. And this guy has the nerve to call the book Learning Native Wisdom. I recommend it if you want a kind of surrealist nightmare of a book that'll kind of drive you nuts. I swear. Anyway, sorry to take up so long with that, but I couldn't resist.
Well, it's that same kind of thing of how do we begin dismantling this mass? Or, you know, how is there any kind of coherent opposition when you've got people stuck in a past of, you know, well, I'm the anarcho-syndicalist insurrectionist who wants to have the proletarianization of the workers, let's industrialize this, you know, with no connection. Okay, so what's happening in the Gulf, you know? How does this all work? What are we taking on? What are we trying to do? Who? Where?
Mm-hmm. It's all up for grabs. It really is. I mean, maybe that sounds like more giddy optimism, but when you look at the complete ludicrous bankruptcy of these people that are supposedly oppositional in some sense or another, it's non-existent. I mean, you've made that claim, and I think in a way when you've said, well, the left isn't even worth bothering about, it doesn't even exist, I think that's true in a sense, in that sense. You know, they represent nothing of any value, and they possibly never have. But, you know, that should potentially free us up to start moving past that. Although we do know that they play these roles where they're, you know, at times certainly actively engaged. For example, you know, Chomsky or Andrew Flood. It's the last thing on earth that they want some public discussion. They want some of these things put on the table and openly debated, and to invite people to check out what makes sense and what doesn't. You know, they don't want that. But I'm really, by the way, I'm really looking forward to Ireland and these three different places and four different talks and meeting some new people. I've never been there. And I think Kevin Tucker is posting on his Facebook site that he has for me some of the details about that if you're listening over there in that part of the world. It's starting up next Friday, the 25th.
Well, and I do think no matter how much people try and put their head in the sand or confuse issues and kind of just want to criticize some of the problems of technology but embrace it to come up with solutions, that you do see more and more this recognition that maybe the problem is civilization, the technology itself, and even this, just the going out on a final word, the New York Times had this in the business section, no less, an article on the new singularity, merely human. That's so yesterday. Talking about we've talked about him before, Ray Kurzweil, who advocates the new singularity, the genetic engineering, nanotechnology, basically total control of human existence. And even within this article in the business, it's, you know, one person's utopia is another person's dystopia. In the years since the Unabomber violently invade against our predations of technology, plenty of other more sober and sophisticated warnings have arrived. There are camps of environmentalists who decry efforts to manipulate nature. On and on, even to a popular network television show, Fringe, playfully explores some of these concerns. So, you know, mm-hmm. as you start dig through the rubble, you see there are more and more people catching on to direction to go.
And it's not just some theory game either. I mean, this book, Spencer Wells' book, which I'm just referring to, I haven't read it all. Much of any of it, just excerpts and two reviews. The subtitle is The Unforeseen Cost of Civilization. Well, Has it worked out? What's the result? What are the fruits of the consequences? And not just the spectacular stuff like what's the horrendous thing in the Gulf of Mexico, but every other way. You know, you can look at it. It's not some mysterious thing. I mean, what?
Right, right. Wake up and look around you.
Mm-hmm.
and the other, I mean, even talking about China, from rural to urban overnight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, wake up and look around you. One kind of life to another.
Mm, so true. Well, he'll be back. Well, we're going to give way to Chris and the Noise Show. We're on a little different schedule here in the summer. We're already in the middle of, we're at the very beginning of the kind of non-student phase.
The
here
non-student
phase.
In fact, they graduated yesterday or something, yeah. And what the Oregonian title page said, front page of Sunday said, good luck 2010 graduates, and then in parentheses it says you'll need it. I thought, whoa, true but bitter.
Yeah.
You know, very bitter.
What happened
not
to
very
the happy
nice
commencement speech kind of stuff.
That's right.
Well, I'll be back by myself next week, and there will be no show on the 29th for you that missed that announcement earlier in the month. And thanks so much, Catherine.
Hey, it's been great. A pleasure to be back.
Thank you.